We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, my guy, Jack Manuel. Jack, what's up?
Jordi Guardiola. That's for all the Manchester City fans and Barcelona fans out there.
Yeah. Jack bringing some international flavor as always. We're going to jump into Jordi's presser. As always, you can check the Buzz on all streaming platforms. But Jack, where did you want to start with our new head coach?
I wanted to ask you, Nick, what were your biggest takeaways from him and his introduction to Nets fans and Nets world?
Yeah, I think the demeanor, you know, the personality definitely stuck out. The comments about Claxton, you know, wanting to bring him back, him being a priority. And then also I thought another interesting comment was him talking about wanting to coach youth. He liked that idea and wanting to have players around for a while because he thinks then you can get the most out of them. So kind of interesting. Not sure it means a ton in terms of the Nets direction, but maybe it's just his preference or just preference at the time.
Yeah, I think the way he spoke, I liked the little thing where he was asked like his favorite, you know, favorite moments in basketball, and was the 2016 finals, and you know, his favorite album, Blueprint. Yeah, I like the little behind the scenes sort of stuff. You know, he's a cook. So I don't know. This is a man after my heart. The Nets do like their international coaches. They've hired three of them, obviously. So they're a big fan when it comes to the international flavor, as we are here on the Brooklyn Buzz. Hopefully this one has a bit more success. But yeah, the way he communicated and the sort of standards that he sort of was already starting to sort of set, the fact he's communicated with all the players already, yep. You know, when he said, you know, the process doesn't start yet, and, you know, he's been given the blessing to do Team Canada. He's like, you know, training camp isn't for a couple of months, but my work starts now. And yeah, I think he's going to, obviously, you know, game by game, we'll probably have our critiques of him. Some of it might be a bit rash. Some of it might not be. Some of it will be subjective. Some of it will be objective. But as it currently stands, you know, the vibes are good in Brooklyn, and Jordi's bringing some of those good vibes with him.
Yeah, I think he also had maybe an obsession with preparation, which is a great thing for a head coach. You know, he mentioned multiple times about, you know, being prepared, getting organized, especially with having such a busy summer. They asked him how he'd kind of deal with that. He mentioned just prepare, you know, organize, get things together and put yourself in place. And like you said, I really like the idea that he talked to everyone on the team. You know, coaches do that typically, but not always as fast as he did. You know, this is less than a week in terms of from he was officially hired to now. So good for him. And I'm excited, you know, just to see. And he seemed like a guy ready for a challenge and seemed confident, but not cocky.
Yeah, Nick, let's just get right into some of his like key quotes. I want to ask a question for you off of those quotes. Now, I've read every single article that's pertained to Jordi Fernandez, even tried to get some paywall ones as well. But we'll start with this. He said, we will see results right away. This industry is about getting results and getting better. So how much are we going to get better? It's how we believe the process is important. We know that there's proper steps to take and we'll see improvement right away. Nick, do you think the Nets are in a place to get results right away?
Yeah, I mean, most likely that's telling you that we're not going to go into a rebuild and we're going to have a similar team. And he probably thinks he can get more out of what they did, you know, than last season. He thinks he can make them perform at a higher level and also just compete. You know, I think he's saying results, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win 50 games or anything like that, but I think just improving, you know, getting the process and setting a standard and being more competitive and really grinding out games, you know, losing more games on the last possession rather than it being over before the fourth quarter starts. You know, I think that's still progress moving forward, not the most ideal scenario, but still, I think that's what he's talking about. It's just like being better than what we were last year. And I think it's pretty easy to see how the team can be better under a different coach and a different system and a different style, and then maybe one or two pieces taking a jump or added to the team.
Yeah, look, I think you alluded to, and I think this was mentioned as well in Sean Marks' comments, which we can touch on if we have the time. Yeah, the results right away is talking about the fact that there could be divergent paths that this team could take. You and I both spoke about this in an episode before Jordy was hired, or around when Jordy was hired. In fact, I think it was literally the day of. And we're like, does this indicate the direction for the Nets? And we both sort of hedged our bets, and we were right to do so, because Sean Marks himself said that, you know, Jordy can coach a team with Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, whoever else, and, you know, role players around him, or he can coach a team with Cam Thomas, Nick Claxton, everyone, Noah Clowney, everyone else. So, yeah, I think that's what I got from that. And yeah, the results right away thing, like, I don't think the Nets are in a great spot. But yeah, in saying that, you know, I think that they should improve, you know, hopefully more than 32 wins next year under Mr. Fernandez.
Yeah, and I think also it's just kind of the idea of, like, we've talked about this a lot as the season's ended. You know, most of the guys on the team played their worst season. You know, it was not the best season of their career. They played at a lesser level than what they had the previous couple seasons. So the fact is, you saw a decline. Now you just want those guys to get back to their typical standard, maybe a little bit better. And he also just seems like a guy that's not going to take any BS. He's going to set an expectation for you that's realistic and help you get to that spot and put you in a great position to do so, at least based off of what he's saying. So I think that should really help guys, because we heard just little rumblings, you know, at the exit pressers and different stuff all season, that the team wasn't necessarily like completely on the same page and they needed a little bit more order. You know, it even started with Spencer Dinwiddie saying there was no like real decision on who's going to be the lead ball handler and run the team. So I think all that different stuff should help a team like the Nets, specifically with their personalities, take a step forward.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I'm surprised we actually haven't started this with the Clack City. Maybe I should have, but it's the one that's been making the rounds. Even the general NBA pods have been speaking about it. Sean Marks saying, we hope he's a Net for a very long time, and we hope we can continue to build around him and build with him and so forth. Jordy Fernandez saying, I believe he'll be Defensive Player of the Year. He's a priority in this summer and the way we can play through him. He's great in pick and roll. He's quick to the rim. He puts pressure on the rim, but also his ability to play the dribble handoff game, which, as you guys know, lately in the NBA is a style that is very efficient. So it fits perfectly what we want to do moving forward. Nick, I think Nick Claxton is going to be sticking around in Brooklyn, and Clack City is going to be setting up its roots in the Brooklyn borough.
Yeah, it seems that way. You know, based off comments from two of the most important people in the organization, Sean Marks and Jordy Fernandez, and also the comments he made about Clacks being more involved in the offense, I think would be something Clacks really likes. We discussed that on previous pods throughout the season, not getting enough touches, not necessarily being involved. Also, he mentioned in his presser, I'm sure we'll touch on at some point, that he wants to play fast. That helps Clacks too. We saw him kind of push the ball in transition a little bit more last year than he had in previous seasons. So yeah, it seems like the Nets want to, you know, build with Clacks. And I think also there is some value in just retaining a draft pick and watching him, you know, hit his peak. That does help your quote unquote culture and just organization of like, hey, we drafted this guy and we took him to potentially Defensive Player of the Year. And I think also that's kind of an example of Jordy Fernandez and what he's going to do for players is like, hey, I think you can get here and I'm going to set a really high goal, but I'm going to help you get there. And I think there's a realistic possibility. It's, you know, if we went into next season, you know, Clacks probably has at least a 10% chance about being Defensive Player of the Year if the Nets were a top 5 or 7 defense.
Yeah, and we can touch on some of his comments in relation to the team overall. But the Nick Claxton stuff is, you know, setting things in stone. Now, what that number will be still remains to be seen. We've seen some odds from betting agencies around opposing teams that could be after his services. You know, Nick Claxton being a Defensive Player of the Year candidate, I think both of you and I believe really strongly in his ability to be an all defensive caliber player, and he has been for the last 2 or 3 seasons. But I'm still like, maybe me becoming more skeptical about Clax is how much more growth is there left in him on both ends of the floor? You know, is he going to be more than a 12 and 10, 2.5, 3 blocks a game guy? Because look, Gobert, Wembanyama, Bam, Anthony Davis, these are probably the 4 best defensive bigs in the league. And you could throw in Jaren Jackson Jr. I think Jaren Jackson Jr. and Nick Claxton are probably in that sort of second tier. I don't think Nick Claxton is going to be the defensive player of the year in a league where those four guys exist. But and maybe Jordy Fernandez sees something in Nick Claxton that we don't. But I think we might have already seen the peak of Nick Claxton. I think he will maintain that peak and that he's still top 10-ish, you know, a center in the NBA. But I wouldn't necessarily go read it. Hopefully those comments don't mean, hey man, we have to retain this guy. Even if, you know, Detroit throw the bag in water, we got to like match it, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it'll be intriguing to see. I'm just throwing some cold water on the Nick Claxton hype train. As much as, you know, I'm as a bigger believer in Clax City, that let's temper it a little bit, because we need to also think about the ramifications for the team overall and building moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. Contract is playing a huge factor. I don't think he'll end up getting as crazy as contract, what's being predicted out there, especially with the limited, you know, suitors out there. You know, if Detroit wanted to offer him a ridiculous amount of money, you know, that could happen, but also that'd be bad for them. And Clax might not want to go lose games, you know, not to say that the Nets are the best team, but Detroit hasn't really been much. And there's no guarantee you're going to be super involved. And it's going to be a weird scenario where you're potentially fighting for minutes, I guess, or not having, you know, the full big load as being like, you know, the main guy. I think in terms of Clax getting better, that's definitely a fair question. I think one thing he has going for him, he missed majority of his rookie year. So he's 25. He has another year offseason. I think physically getting stronger is still a thing for him that's going to be a factor in terms of just taking him to that next step defensively where he can absorb contact from bigger guys. And I would say last year when KD and Kyrie were still on the team, he was a top three defensive player of the year candidate. So I think also some of it plays into your defense, but also, you know, Wemby in the league, I wouldn't want to be competing for defensive player of the year anytime soon, because he's just going to be ridiculous. You know, he's a guy that's just going to block, you know, he could average over 4 blocks a game. Like, that's not crazy to think. So it might be tough for him to win the official award, but I think even just being, you know, in the candidacy on a regular basis is still something big for your career.
Yeah, I think he's an all-defensive team candidate, you know, pretty consistently. But as I alluded to, you know, Wemby's in a tier of his own. Gobert generally is in a tier of his own, at least. I mean, he probably will be for the next couple of years before he starts to wane. And Bam and AD, I think, are a step above what, you know, Bam locked down Jason Tatum for an entire night, you know, the other game. And he's just a very special defensive player. And look, I'm not saying Nick Claxton isn't. You know, I've been as high on Nick Claxton in terms of his ability to switch, his recovery blocks, his athleticism, his fluidity. He's center of gravity. He has so many great defensive traits, but I'm trying to bring some objectivity to the conversation around Claxton. As hard as it is for me, I just want to try and provide that perspective too before we, you know, go all in and just think about how this team is moving forward.
Yeah, I think also it's the offense too, as you question, you know, can he develop a little bit more of a post game? I think this year he did a better job of, you know, taking advantage of mismatches, you know, when he got a point guard or a really small two guard, you know, was able to kind of work them, use a drop step, use a spin move, whatever it is. It's kind of just really polishing some of those areas. If he's never going to add a jumper, I mean, I think that's still out there. It's not a super, it's kind of like a lottery odd right now, but there's still a chance he could maybe turn into like a 30% three-point shooter at some point, which would just be enough to be something.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, that's where, like, you know, some offensive growth. And look, we can have a discussion around Nick Claxton moving forward. We'll do some player grades and stuff, and we can probably dive a bit more deep there. But let's get back to some of Jordy's comments, yep. Nick. And he alluded to a desire to be top 10 on both ends of the floor. Now, that's all relative and good, but the Nets were bottom 10 on both ends this season, Nick. Like, bottom 10. How are they going to be top 10? Look, you have to, like, unless you, like, let me just quickly double check. They were 20th in defense and I think 23rd in offense. How are they going to be top 10 on both ends of the floor? Jordy Fernandez isn't Eric Spoelstra.
Yeah, I think he said the comment with some, like, a little bit of just like everyone wants to be type of thing. So I think it's kind of just like the goal doesn't necessarily mean the Nets are going to get there, but that's the goal. You want to be really good on both ends of the floor. You want to be, you know, top third of the league on both ends. I think realistically, the Nets could still be a top 10 defense this year. It's the offense that's going to be more of a question in terms of, you know, can they get to 15? You know, that would be something I think would be good if they could land a top 10 defense. With the talent they have, they should be able to get to that level.
Yeah, the talent is what the talent is. And we sort of predicted that in our season preview that this, like, look at all these guys here. Like, come on, surely that means top 10 in defense. But yep. At the end of the day, it needs to be executed, and the coach needs to bring that out of them. And we saw that in fits and spurts through different nights, and under Kevin Ollie, I think, was probably where we saw a more consistent stretch of games. But in terms of the offense, Nick, he preached pace. He preached pace quite a bit, you know, getting the ball quickly. And I tried to dive deep into, you know, what the Nets are like in terms of shooting within the shot clock and that sort of thing, and then looked up the pace numbers. And look, the Nets weren't the quickest team in the world. In fact, they're one of the bottom five teams. They were 25th in pace last season. Now, look, I know Sean Marks probably still believes in Ben Simmons, given the comments that we heard around him following the surgery and such, and all the kerfuffle that happened around him. But yeah, this team, I think, needs to play with pace. It's about, can they? Will they? Like, Cam Thomas doesn't seem scream to me like a super pace guy. Mikal Bridges has felt, you know, slow in his movements and decision making this season. Cam Johnson isn't Tyrese Maxey. Like, it pace, and look, we're not the Sacramento Kings. We don't have De'Aaron Fox either, or Malik Monk, or these sort of guys. I just feel like, are we gonna look? The pace will probably increase from 25th, but are we gonna be a bottom half of, like, you know, the Wizards, the Pacers, the Spurs, the Lakers? Those are the top four sort of guys. The Nets going to be around there, Nick? Should they be? Should they want to be?
I mean, I think, you know, if you're undermanned offensively, like, getting in transition obviously is going to create easier shots for you. And I think some of that can just come with energy and hustle and just kind of locking down. Also, I think a factor that we don't really talk enough about with pace is rebounding. You know, if you have to, you know, have most of your guys stay back and rebound, you're not going to get in transition as much. So definitely something to keep an eye on. But I will say, you know, the coach is very definitive in terms of saying, like, you know, we get this shot, take this shot. You know, it kind of sets the tone of, like, what's a good shot, what's a bad shot. You know, if he's happy with them taking, you know, threes early in the shot clock, if it's just an open shot, then they're going to turn the pace up a little bit more. If there's kind of a unknown factor about who's in charge or who's taking shots and stuff like that, I think the indecision kind of played into some of the coaching last year. So if you can clear that up, you might be able to just get guys feeling a little bit more comfortable and confident out there and just let it loose, which I thought they kind of did early in the season. And then as it progressed, it kind of just became, everything became a headache.
Yeah, I think Ben is the point. Whoever is the lead guard, Ben, Dennis, Cam, MT, like that will dictate a lot in terms of the identity of the team on offense, you know, the reps that the team will have. But a final Jordy Fernandez quote I wanted to analyze a little bit, Nick, is, you know, you talked about him believing in this young core of the Nets. And funnily enough, there are only a couple of teams in the NBA that had an average age younger than the Brooklyn Nets. The average age of the Brooklyn Nets roster was 24.9, same as the Washington Wizards. The only teams younger were the Charlotte Hornets, the Portland Trailblazers, the Orlando Magic, the Utah Jazz, the Detroit Pistons, and the San Antonio Spurs. I was honestly surprised by that. Now, I'm not sure like how good the young core is. I think that there are some really quality pieces. You know, we've been big Clowney and Cam T fans, and despite, you know, some of my skepticism around Nick Claxton, I'm a massive believer in what he's done and what he can do. How much do you believe in the young core? Do you believe in it as much as Jordy Guardiola, or are you a bit more tepid in your assessment of this roster?
Well, I'll just say the thing with the average too, it's important to remember that the Nets drafted the two youngest players in the draft last season. So that skews the numbers a touch. You know, Clowney was what, 18 when the Nets, now he's 19. I think Derek Whitehead's 19 as well. So really, really young guys too. So I guess that plays a factor in it. I mean, I don't believe it's one of the best young cores in the league, but I mean, there's some promise. You know, you look at Cam Thomas and maybe he could be an all-star at some point. You look at Noah Clowney, you know, maybe he can be fringe all-star if he really like turns out great. I think Jalen Wilson, most likely long-term bench player, which is okay. And Claxton, you know, defensive specialist, fourth, fifth starter type, maybe he can develop offensively, but you don't have any number one, two options on this team for a championship team. Maybe Cam could get there, but that would still be best case scenario. I think you'd rather have him as your like third or fourth best player. So there's something, there's some stuff, but it's not enough where, you know, you're feeling like contenders in house.
Any final takeaways from Jordy, Nick, before we get to Sean Marks, who also addressed the media a couple of days ago?
Not really. You know, Jordy, obviously, we heard a lot of great stuff. He said all the right things. It's a matter of executing on the court now.
Nick, in terms of the Kiwi Wizard, as I've referred to him in the past, what were your biggest takeaways from him and what he said to the media, other than Derek Whitehead's coming back, baby, and Cam Thomas is finally getting the praise, and the BS report brought to you by Sean Marks and the Brooklyn Nets organization?
Yeah, I mean, he really didn't say too much, you know, nothing really stuck out. I think he also said, you know, things about Clax being a priority. I think Clax was a pretty big theme of this presser. The Cam Thomas stuff is always nice, you know, just for Cam to kind of get some praise, but overall nothing too crazy. Any big takeaways from you, Jack?
Derek Whitehead, Nick, I'm all in on this shit. He said this, Derek should play in summer league, should be available in summer league. Whether or not he plays the entire summer league or not, that'll be TPD. But the plan right now is he's in the gym every day. You better believe the Brooklyn Buzz will be covering the summer league as intently as any other podcast out there to see some Derek Whitehead time. Because, you know, if he plays one good game in comparison, like we saw what Noah Clowney did in the summer league, it wasn't necessarily amazing. Jalen Wilson was pretty bloody good, but we'll be goddamn sickos. And we've been... Look, we've seen the most minor glimpses of Derek Whitehead playing a bit of NBA basketball before being shut down because of the foot. But I'm excited about that, and I'm thankful and in so many ways that Cam Thomas is finally getting his flowers. He's gotten plenty from plenty of fans, including the CT obsessed like me. But yeah, I'm excited about that Derek Whitehead stuff, and we can chat about the Ben Simmons stuff if you want, Nick.
I just one comment on Whitehead. I think it's also important to note is like the Nets are. They don't have a pick right now, so who knows if they'll have a pick in the draft and they'll have a rookie. If not, at least Whitehead gives you some excitement for summer league, someone to really kind of key in on. And obviously, I think Clowney's going to probably play in summer league too. So two guys to really watch and see what they can do. But the Ben stuff, I mean, if you want to, we can.
Yes, we are going back. The BS report brought to you by Sean Marks himself. He said he's down in Miami rehabbing now from surgery. All signs point towards him being available for the start of next season. And there's obviously some other bullshit there. But Nick, Ben Simmons is back. We're forecasting forward. He's leading the team. I mean, we saw last year, and we spoke about it a little bit on this pod and on previous pods, the fact that the Nets were so heavily reliant on what was going to be Ben Simmons leading this team in terms of an offensive identity. I really hope that Ben Simmons is just an afterthought in all of this, and Sean Marks has learned his lesson, as has the rest of the franchise, because at the end of the day, this dude is just on like a near expiring contract. That's what you got to think him about. And anything more you get from that is a goddamn bonus. The Bears Report brought to you by Sean Marks and a fellow Australian, a fellow Southern Hemisphere Australian to Ben Simmons, Jack Manuel.
Yeah, I think, you know, with the Ben stuff, I think at this point, the Nets are probably just spewing BS that they're just trying to say the right thing publicly. I mean, they'd have to be pretty dumb to have faith that Ben will be 100% and ready to contribute next season. So if that's the case, then we're ready to fire everyone, including Joe Tsai. If there's some real belief that we're depending on Ben Simmons for anything, you know, other than just taking the team photo. No offense to him. His back is shot. He's had multiple injuries. You know, it says, what are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Dude, that say? Is so savage, just taking the team photo. Dude, I thought I was savage, man. That's good. I like that.
I mean, let's be real, Jack. What else are you expecting from Ben?
Well,
playing
I think
20 games? Like,
Instagram,
I'm not even trying to take a shot at him. It's just the fact of information that's happened the last 3 years or 2 years.
Wasn't it AJ from Nets Kingdom, I think, posted some Instagram screenshot or something that we saw from Ben. I mean, we'll be the Bears. We'll need some content in the offseason, Nick. So every single little frame of those Instagram photos we'll be dissecting as soon as they're posted on Twitter, because I don't go on Instagram.
We did a three-part series on Ben Simmons last year, and it ended up being a waste of our time. No offense. Again, I don't hate Ben Simmons. I wish him the best. I hope he's healthy. But realistically, he's produced close to nothing for the Nets in terms of long-term production over the course of a season. 10, 20 games does not mean much to me in an 82-game season.
No, it doesn't. Nor does however many, 55 games across three seasons as a Brooklyn Net, however many games it is, whatever the number is. But it's always good to bring back the Bears Report, Nick, you know, even if it is just the end of the pod for a couple of minutes. And
I get a good laugh out of you. That's worth it.
I think if all the listeners didn't laugh at that, that was some top-notch quality comedy right there. Nick is drinking the Haterade, and I'm sure there's plenty of other people out there that are drinking it too.
All right, Jack. I think that wraps this one up. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. Check the buzz on all streaming platforms.